dedicated to HBO's Game of Thrones and George R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire book series. You're listening to Podcast Winterfell.
Welcome back, everyone, to Podcast Winterfell. We are a part of the DVR Podcast Network. You can check us out at dvrpodcast.com. Just want to start out and give a huge thanks to all of our patrons. I want to welcome Aaron, Vanessa, and Bill, our newest patrons. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/DVR. You probably noticed something new with this episode. If you're looking at your podcatcher, it's our new logo. And I just want to give a huge thank you to Zamorta, Z-A-M-O-O-R-T-A, a.k.a. Del on Twitter. Follow them. Great art all the time. We're always retweeting it. We have tons of art that Del did that we're tweeting out to. So just want to give a huge thank you there. I do want to tell you that we are going to do an extra week of pods for the season wrap up. So you got us this week. You got us next week after the finale. Then we're going to do another three pods, the IR, call in, and deep dive the week after. Those are all going to be season wrap ups. And we're still going to continue with Game of Thrones content in the off season. So stay with us. One more thing. Follow us at DVR Podcast on Twitter, at DVR Podcast. We have plenty of new and awesome podcasts coming, and that's going to be kind of the main feed on Twitter when new stuff is coming out, just to let you know. So follow us there. I'm not going to be retweeting everything that's on the other podcast. That's just going to be like, hey, we've got a new podcast or something to announce, you know? So give us a follow at DVR Podcast. And I want to give a thank you there to Tom, who also did our Westworld logo. He rocked out a new logo just like in a day. It's amazing. I love the logo. He's still working on it a little bit, but I wanted to get it out there for tonight's episode. Okay, sorry for talking so much. I want to hear from Heath. Heath, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Folo. Game of Thrones, baby.
Okay, so let's just get into it. What did you think of the episode?
Oh, man, I loved it. There were times I realized it was a longer episode, so I like paused it once. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. There's like 40 minutes left. And though it was a little predictable at a couple of points, I didn't mind it. I enjoyed it. There was more powerful scenes than the action. And I'm not saying it's the best episode ever, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Okay. Cool, man. Cool. Yeah, I have mixed feelings, I have to admit. This is probably the most mixed feelings I have of the whole season. There's parts of it I loved. My heart was racing the whole time. But there's parts of it that I didn't love. And, you know, I have to... Gosh, it's hard for me. It's like I feel emotional about it, but I have to... agree with some of the people online about the kind of forced nature of the plot and the speed at which things are happening. The geography, though I try to let it go, it is affecting a little bit the believability of certain character motivations. But I have answers to that too, so I am not like other people. I don't think that, you know, this is bad writing, terrible episode. I can understand why it's happening as it's happening, but I was happy, man. I mean, probably out of a 10, I would probably give this a 7. So it's not like a 9 or a 10, which is kind of what I was expecting. But I don't know. Do you hear where I'm coming from,
yeah.
Solo?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I was expecting a 10, and I give it like an 8.3 because I love to do the points. I loved a lot of it, but some of it just didn't – it didn't leave me with like, oh, my God, I'm blown away. And I'm wondering if it's someone who has watched the episode before and says, wow, and or people like, this is going to be epic. Throwing away that, though, my own feelings – I'm with you. I mean, granted, I love Game of Thrones. It's awesome. There's some great scenes. I got excited, but it just, some stuff didn't hit for me. So yeah. I'm kind of with you, man. It was excellent. It was really good. It was really good. It just, you know, it was, I predicted too much, and part of it was just, I don't know. It just was like, okay, this is happening. I bet you this is going to happen. And I wasn't surprised. So it kind of bummed me out a little bit. But it was still a very good episode.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, let's address, I mean, I think we'll address these things as they come up. So let's kind of go through. There's a lot of scenes. This is the initial reaction. We're not going to cover everything. Of course, DJ will be back with the call-in tomorrow night. Follow us on Twitter at Winterfell Pod to find out more about that. And then the deep dive with Tracy and Mike. And we might be getting a Donald and Matt episode. I can't guarantee it. They're trying to put it together. I'll be really happy to listen to it. But we're trying to set up a Matt and Donald episode. So that should be cool. So, all right, let's start. All right, okay. So the name of this episode is Beyond the Wall, written by Dan and Dave, and I forgot to put who it was directed by, but it was directed. So we start off with a very cool, slow tracking shot over the table at Dragonstone. And then it meshes into Beyond the Wall, and we've got Jon Snow and the crew. And this is kind of a setup scene where there's a lot of joking around, and Gendry is really cold. And it was a nice little introduction to the Trek, right?
Yeah, because we had the Magnificent Seven together, you know, and so it was good. I kind of knew banter had to be coming, which... Throughout the Trek, we got that. The only issue I have with it is I didn't realize there were a couple of other people with them who got killed. It was like Transformers. I'm like, did someone just die? I mean, we'll get to it as we move on. But I thought it was just the main cast. I didn't know there was a couple of other people with them.
Yeah, there. If you watched... Well, I shouldn't say that. That's a bad way of saying it. That's like saying you didn't watch, right?
If you pay attention, Solo...
I know. I hate when people fucking do that, right? If you had watched. No, well, he's on a podcast with you, Folo. Solo did watch. But, yeah, you saw them coming out of Eastwatch in the end of last episode. And then kind of when they do the big looking down shot, you know, you kind of see some extra people. But, yeah, this episode did have an awful lot of me thinking... Did Jorah just die? Did Thoros just die? Like, just a lot of times I couldn't tell what was happening. And I do also want to mention that as soon as they were walking there, my wife said, man, it's kind of silly that they don't have hats on.
I said that jokingly. I'm like, man, if they had some hats, they'd be much warmer. But yeah, I did I did the DJ Timmy Hines where I was counting the people. There was like a long shot. And I was like, oh, there's more than seven. I was like, there's like 9 or 10 of them. I'm like, who did I miss? So I did miss the last shot knowing there were other people. But it just kind of – that bummed me out because I thought someone was getting killed right away. And then I'm like, oh, it's some dude we don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But this was this scene was cool for the Jon and Jorah scene. I like that.
Yes.
What did you think? I mean, a lot of people have been talking about that. You know, Jorah's friend zoned by his sword and Jon. it was a good scene.
Yeah, no, it was good to see them talk, and I kind of knew Jorah would give the sword back. Because Jon can't not have Iron Claw. But it was a good moment. It really was. Yeah. And again, as much as some things I was like, oh my God, the banter with the Magnificent Seven, we'll call them, was really good. And I thought that was well done with keeping us in tune as they're just walking on like snow. you know, going to where they need to be. It was good to have the banter and have some of these, like seeing Kit Harington and Ian Glenn together in a scene. Like, that did get me excited as an actor, because I'm like, ah, oh, I love seeing these guys chew up the scenery. And it just, it was for some nice moments.
Yeah, definitely. I liked it. And I bought it, too, that Jorah right. would not take the sword. That's the kind of guy he is. So, it, you know. And also, it's just like John to be like, hey, we're going to, you know, try to get White Walkers and Whites, and I happen to have one of the only swords that can kill them, but hey, do you want
it? That's the same thing Lady Solo said. She goes, John, why are you giving him the sword that can kill a White Walker?
Yeah, it's like a little, and like, I have to say, too, some people said this on Twitter. I mean, come on, they mined all that dragon glass and they don't bring any with them? Like, were we supposed to think that those, like, Tormund had a new kind of axe? Maybe that was a dragon glass? I don't know. They just should have said something.
No, they didn't say anything at all. Huh.
Nah.
I didn't even think of that. And, disappointing. Kind of silly.
All right, so we're moving now to what I found to be the most disappointing part of this episode for me, which is what really kind of brought me down. The other stuff I can kind of get around, but which is we're at Winterfell. Arya and Sansa have their confrontation. Sansa's looking around. She finds a scroll, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of it, Arya kind of gives her knife. And this was just, I don't know, man. This just isn't working for me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was hoping there were some theories that the two of them were playing Littlefinger.
Yeah.
You know, and then when that didn't happen, I was disappointed, and I was just like, oh, man. You know, it's the sour part of the episode. It just, I don't like Littlefinger getting one over on our Winterfell, our Starks, and it's working. And everything, like, as a fan, we're shouting, Sansa, don't do this. Don't do this. Arya, don't do this. And they're doing it. And I'm just, it's annoying me to hell. We're getting fast-paced, this and that. Things are happening. And then we get this, and I'm like, oh, don't slow this down and don't do this. I'm with you. It's just, it is frustrating me because I want the sisters to be together and I want them to work together and it's not happening, and it's going the opposite direction.
Yeah, and for me, it's strange because, you know, two episodes ago, I was like, Arya's my favorite character. I love the scene with her and Brienne, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't sure where they were going with Sansa. Now I feel opposite. I feel like Sansa is being honest. She's being forthright. As much as she could be in this situation, and Arya's acting like a fucking psycho. Like, it's right. just real, it's really weird, and I just, I have to tell you, the entire time, they went back to this, what, 3 or 4 times, and the entire time, I thought that at some point, either Sansa or Littlefinger was going to take off their face and it would be Arya.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think of that.
I thought that Arya had already killed one of them and was playing it out because she believed so strongly that the both of them were against Jon. But I don't know, man. I don't know. Let's go back to the trek, all right?
Yeah, let's go back.
All right, let's go back. We got to go back. We got to go back.
We got to go back, Folo.
So this was probably maybe one of my favorite scenes of the episode, when my man, the Hound, and Tormund are talking, and Tormund has a great line where he says, what does he say? What does he say? Ginger? Does he say gingers or does he say redheads?
He says gingers. I thought of you.
Yeah, where he says gingers are beautiful. And I just want to tell Tormund, you're beautiful. Now, for those of you at home who don't know, my hair, I would look like Tormund if I grew my hair out. My hair is shockingly red, as is my beard. It's a little gray right now, but I am a prototypical redhead. My sister has auburn hair. My brother has dirty blonde. I am a redhead. So,
and just for the record, I'm as black as Jon Snow on my hair. So just wanted to let people know.
That's us. That's us. I'm Tormund with Jon Snow.
Yeah, that is us. That's
the bastard podcaster.
Proportionally, it works because Jon's so short and Tormund's so tall. But you know,
yeah, dude, you want to know something? in real life, I'm about 4 inches taller than him.
Yeah, I heard that because Jon Snow is really short in real life. So add four inches to
I'm 4 inches taller than Tormund.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Oh, okay. Tormund's not that tall. Jon Snow's really short. He's shorter than me. And because I'm like 5'9", 5'10". Snow's got to be like 5'6", 5'7", maybe.
Yeah, with man, all the actors, you got to be. See, if you're a short man, then they don't have to put the apple boxes to get you for the woman.
Apple. Yeah, right.
To make the woman taller. But you know, Tom Cruise shoots everything on an apple box. There's like, they give it a name and everything in every movie he's on in because he's shorter than everybody. Let's see. Then they mention Brienne, which was great when he starts describing her. And you know what? It was kind of cute and it was kind of beautiful the way he was like describing her and everything, you know, it was really
big
nice.
Babies.
And by the way, it kind of sounds like how I describe my wife to people, except for the except for the blonde hair.
Oh, that's
what I always said to people. We're gonna make my son is Shaq sized. So then Barrick talks to John about being brought back, and you had a line here that you by the way, Heath did the write up, and I want to thank him for doing that this week. Thank you, Heath.
Dude, it's the least I could do, bro. You have a kid. Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Lady Solo and myself, so.
Well, soon enough, my brother. Men shields that guards the realm of... What does it say? What does he say? Man shields that guards the realm of men?
Something like that, yeah. I don't know if I wrote it down exactly right, but that stuck with me. Like, when they really go, oh, we should stop there. Like, they have to protect people that can't defend themselves, and that we're the last stop before humanity gets stricken by these dead White Walkers. So I thought that was a good, like, hey, you may not agree with everything the Lord of the Light. We've been brought back. You may not fully be there, Jon Snow, but right now, this is what we need to do. And we need to defend. And if they get past us, humanity is screwed.
Yeah. Now, book readers probably know, I think that's part of the Night's Watch credo, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that was good, too. I liked the way they were talking about, you know, the Lord of Light, and John was like, I serve the North. I thought that was really interesting because, I don't know, you know, I have this far-flung theory that somehow there is an actual Lord of Light and there's going to be like a third person who enters this battle. I mean, it's based on nothing. I just think it'd be fun, but I don't think it's going to happen. But I kind of like that at least they're still coming back to that, because I think that that's something that people have wanted to see for a long time. Like the two guys who have been brought back from the dead kind of talking to each other. And I like the way Barrick just kind of sidles up to him and is like, so I heard you were brought back from the dead. So
yeah,
was I.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a great moment. Again, the pairings, and it made sense. And, you know, again, I love, you know, we call it the Magnificent Seven Trek or whatever. But, again, I think what they did very well this episode was to get these side conversations illuminated, and we didn't waste time. It was stuff we wanted to hear.
Yeah, cool. And that scene ends when they see the mountain shaped like an arrowhead. And I do want to bring up that can't remember which one of the guys it was from Shad on TV picked up on that like days ago. And that's pretty much the only place I saw it until tonight. A lot of people had picked up on it. Is that is actually the same mountain that's in the background when the children make the Night King.
Oh, very good.
So I retweeted it, and it's probably, I think it's all over Twitter now, but it's the same kind of mountain. So it's, that's pretty interesting that they're kind of coming to where it all began, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
I like
so
that
now,
too.
Yeah. Now we jump to Dragonstone, Dany and Tyrion talking about Cersei, talking about her, Dany going there, and you know, Tyrion, and you know, if they can trust Jaime. And then they get into the age-old discussion about, you know, how tough can she be? And also, the weird thing about this is how she was really going at Tyrion.
As well as she should, I thought. Because she's like, I didn't get Dorne and Highgarden with your, you know, council. And it kind of made sense. Like he's trying to say, hey, you got, we got a plan ahead. There could be a trap. Trap here. We got to set a trap. They may set a trap. Blah, blah, blah. You know, she hits up, well, you're a Lannister and you think like them and blah, blah, blah. But when it comes down to it is Tyrion, you know, what we've talked about on podcast, Tyrion, you haven't been great in your what the hell is the word I'm looking for? Not philosophy, your recommendations or your, you know, awareness. And so I thought she was a little hard on Tyrion, but she needed to be. But again, we got the two axes here. It's Lady Olenna saying, I've lived longer than most men who advise me, all of them. Don't listen. Go your own route. And then you got Varys in Tyrion's ear saying, you got to convince Dany to do it your way. So that is colliding here.
Yeah, yeah. And I that's a good way of putting it. And, I mean, this Thank is you. A recurring theme. And I think that it's just a hard one because, as we see, Tyrion doesn't want her to go with the dragon and then a dragon dies. But it's like, what else was she supposed to do? And I do just think that it's like Tyrion is good maybe at political counsel, but not war counsel. And it's kind of hard to tell because right now they're at war. So I can't blame her either, Solo. Like, I don't know why, even at this point, how much faith she'd have in Tyrion, you know? And
yeah.
And I don't know how much faith I have in him because I don't know if I trust Jaime. I don't, you know, I agree with Dany that Cersei probably has a million. She's got plan A to Z. If they're coming in there, you know what I'm saying? I thought it was interesting. And then they have the second part of the conversation, which is about, which I thought was really interesting why they're talking about this, why the writers would bring it up, Dan and Dave here. They start talking about, who would, succeed her, who would follow her on the throne, the line of succession. And I just thought that was really, you know, it's like, I guess Tyrion was worried about her dying, but I don't know. It just felt weird to me. And I was just like, why are they bringing this up now?
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, and then I thought, well, you know, you got to win these little wars or these little battles before you win the war. So I'm like, but at the same time, I'm like, Tyrion is making sense, but Dany is in no frame of mind at this point to be thinking long term. There's so much ahead that's right there. But, like you said, the writers bring up a great point. It's like, okay, great. It's like you conquer Marine or whatever, Slaver's Bay, release the slaves, you leave, then it goes back to normal. That's like the minor, I mean, slavery isn't minor, but in the Game of Thrones anthology, it's like, okay, that happened before. So now when it comes to the bigger issue, when you have the throne and then you're gone, it could change. So I like the fact that Tyrion is thinking long term, but there's so much in the short term that needs to get done.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's also bringing up the idea, too, of Jon and Dany getting together and kind of like I think, like, I guess we're supposed to think that John can't have kids because he died. But I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, she says she's convinced she can't have kids, right?
She, yeah. Yeah.
But so was, because she was told that by the woman who killed Khal Drogo and everything, right? And
yeah, the witch.
So I guess they're trying to set that up. But then again, Tyrion's talking about the wheel being broken. And, you know, I'll just go back to a point that I totally have said for the longest time. I think you agree, Solo. And I was actually just listening to Bald Move for their last week's episode, and they were saying the same thing. And I just think it's about all of this stuff about the, you know, who has the right to be the king, and, you know, Gendry is this, and John, oh, John's not a bastard. It's like, who cares? If you're going to break the wheel, then nobody should be king.
Right.
You know, it's just like, who cares? Isn't that what she's fighting against?
Yeah, it's weird because she does talk about sitting on the throne and she wants to be blah, 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 but yet she wants to break it. I don't know. It's, we got a bigger fight ahead, as we know.
Yeah. I think they might get to that point, but that's a point that'll come later. So now we get a really cool White Walker bear. You know, this is kind of cool. I mean, there's not much to say. It was a cool scene. I liked it. The Hound was kind of like a coward when it got lit on fire. You know, I like that they kind of played within this episode, showing him be afraid and then kind of come back later, you know. But also Thoros gets mortally wounded.
Yeah. Your boy.
Anything to say on this this little scene here, Solo?
No, thought it was cool. I just was confused at who was getting. I didn't realize. This is the point where I realized we didn't have a couple of extras. So I'm like, was that Jorah? Is he dead already? We didn't even see him. I was freaking out. And then we were talking about it. I'm like, oh, okay, there was some extra guys in this scene. So that threw me off, but that's my own fault. But yeah, I thought it was a cool scene, and the Hound is a coward, and he's an idiot, as we'll talk about later. And it was interesting, and it just scares you that anything can be resurrected as a white.
Yeah. Oh, good one. You know what, Solo? Didn't even pick that up, that this is foreshadowing for later. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. That was a slam dunk. That wasn't a throw.
No, I alley-ooped you, and I got fouled. That's what it was.
Let's see. Now we have Baelish and Sansa. Baelish kind of weirdly suggests that Brienne get involved, not trying to figure out why he would do that, kind of knowing that Brienne doesn't like him. Maybe he's trying to get Brienne to his side.
I didn't quite get that either. Because he's like, you know, have Brienne step in. She wants to, you know. I think what I got was that maybe she'd step in and fight Arya or protect Sansa more than Arya if she wanted to harm her. But then I'm like, but, you know, I was getting kind of back and forth. Well, what the heck, you know, what is he trying to do? To me, simply, he was trying to get Brienne out of the equation, get her distracted. Because that might be the last, with Jon gone, that might be the last line between him and Sansa. So I'm thinking that's that. I don't know.
Yeah, this was when I started really thinking that is not Littlefinger, that's Arya.
Oh, interesting. That's not like when you first said, I was like, okay, crackpot, but interesting. Now, no more crackpot. That's interesting right there. That'd be awesome. I wish you were right.
Yeah, I have no idea. That's what I got. I'm probably totally wrong, but that's what I got.
It would be a great twist.
It would be kind of cool, right? And I think it would also make people a little excited to go back and rewatch these scenes that seemed awkward.
Right.
You know, like that's why Arya's pushing Sansa so hard, is that she actually wants to make Sansa choose, and she'll know who she chooses because she would have to give it away to Littlefinger.
Dude, that if that comes true, I will bend the knee to you.
All right. Well, I will reach my hand and lift you up. All right. So the weather lightens up. We see this just was all so gorgeous. We have Jorah and Thoros do a little talking. Again, I like when they kind of go back and, you know, they remind each other that they knew this person when, and, you know, I like that.
I do too.
So they see the whites in the distance. Then they start, this is their first kind of fight with them. They sneak up over the mountain. John eventually kills the White Walker, and all but one white dies. Why do you think that one didn't die?
The only thing I can think of is, well, at first I'm like, okay, he killed them, they all die. But then doesn't Thoros or Beric bring up that we got to kill him because he resurrected everyone? But then I was thinking, well, that makes no sense. Then why could the others die unless he only, the White Walker that Jon killed was the only ones that he resurrected? Maybe it's like like if you resurrect, who you resurrect will die under your care. Maybe he was resurrected by one other White Walker. That's the only thing I can think of.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
It's okay, buddy.
Yes, I agree with you. I think that it's like a vampire. Right. So the Night King is the original. So if you cut it off at there, then everyone else dies, including all the other White Walkers. So yes, I like that idea. Now, what I thought was that this was that there are probably hundreds of White Walkers, and each one of them is searching throughout beyond the wall, and then bringing back groups of whites, and that's what they found. They found like their like hunting party found another hunting party. And one of the things I would think is that maybe they always send one white that was resurrected by the Night King or another white with any party they go on. So they maybe have help, but also in case that White Walker dies, the one that's left is like the signal bearer, can kind of send a signal to the other, yes, to the White Walkers, hey, something happened to them.
That's exactly what we thought, because he was screaming, and then we saw the rest of them come up and like, oh, it's almost like he's calling them.
Yes.
So that makes a hell of a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, like, so he is like the kind of like almost like the alarm system in a sense, in case it's like a backup in case the White Walker goes down because they know they're at war. Then there's always going to be at least one white left that can kind of even send like a either verbal or telepathic signal.
Code red, baby. But code that just red. Shows you how smart they are, if that's what they're doing.
Yep. Let's see where are we going. Okay, right. So they capture the white. Now this whole scene was kind of interesting. I like the way that the mouth came off when the Hound tried to be. That was like a little Walking Dead.
Feel a little Walking Dead. Like, don't get bitten. You're gonna turn into one.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. Show. I think my wife said that to me. She's like, if he gets bit, does he become a white? And I was like, no, this is not The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So they capture it. Then they see, oh, crap, winter is coming. Like, that, you know, they see that the big guys are coming after him. John sends Gendry. And I don't know. I just thought it was a little weird that they had the whole thing of, like, give me that axe.
Yeah. It was like, it'll slow you down.
It didn't make any sense to me. It's the same thing as later. Why couldn't Benjen get on the horse? But I guess we'll get there. You know, yeah. But that was a little annoying to me. So then we have a great scene here of the White Walkers attacking on the ice. I thought this was pretty cool.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was definitely the right set piece to to prolong this so they wouldn't get slaughtered. But it reminded me, you know, I think of ice. I think it was the King Arthur movie with Clive Owen had a scene like that when they were on ice. And there's been a few. But, yeah, no, it definitely added to the whole. And then they just surround him. And it's like, what the hell? You know, like, what's going to happen next? And that's yeah. when I'll be, not to skip ahead, but I had a feeling a dragon was going to come and burn them all. But I put that aside and I said, let me enjoy it.
Yeah. Now, I did a little bit of, I did my solo Folo cast on Friday night, which, by the way, was our sixth podcast of the week. I was saying, you know, because I watched the trailer, I did a little trailer talk at the end, and I was like, something's got to save them. And at this point, I was just like, either Danny or, like I said in the podcast, I was either thinking either Danny's going to save them, Uncle Benjen's coming, or somehow Bran is going to help them, or Jon is going to communicate with the Night King, or I don't know. But yeah, this was it was really cool. I liked the way they played with the whole water thing. But there was one thing that I didn't buy with the water thing. And this is what I'll say.
Okay.
They already showed the White Walkers, like when they jumped off the cliff at Hardhome. I thought that they would just all keep on going into the water until they were just on top of each other, and then they'd walk on top of them, the other ones, to them. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'd hate to be the White Walker that drowns, though, sacrificing himself on the ladder.
But this brings me to believe that the Night King planned this out. I want to just introduce that right now. Oh. I think that the whole plan was to get a dragon.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think of that.
So I think they fell right into the Night King's hands. But that's just, as we go on, I'm going to keep that in mind, because that's when I started to think about it. Why aren't they doing that? And then he's just watching them, so. We see Gendry running while they're fighting. Then Davos comes out and gets Gendry. He is now like the fastest man alive. This is where it started to get weird about, oh, by the way, we forgot to mention that Jon tells Gendry to send a raven. Well, I think we may have said that.
Yeah. Send a raven to Dany.
This was a little weird to me. Because I don't know how, and they could have really solved some of this by it, just having someone say, like, you know, I think they said it's about a day's trek from the wall last episode, but I'm not sure. When they were talking to, like, I think when they were talking to Tormund or when they were talking to the Hound, I can't remember. But, I mean, they could have just said, like, you know, it's been a couple hours, or at least when they were trapped, they could have said, like, are we going to die of hunger? It's already been 8 hours. I didn't have my breakfast, or, you know, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's just a little weird that Gendry got there so quick, but I just kept on watching the episode.
Yeah. I kind of go, oh God, okay. He's going to get there, send a raven, blah, blah, blah. Dragon's going to come save him. And I was contemplating in my mind for about 33 seconds, do I get upset over this, or do I just let it go? And, you know, kind of 50-50. It was very convenient. But why send him off with no weapon? I just that part of it, Folo, you know, knocked down the episode a little bit. Just because it just, I just knew it was coming. And it just seemed like, okay, okay, it looks a little darker as they're about to freeze to death on the lake and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, that I did have a problem with.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, if he's really running and he's going, it looked like he was kind of going downhill. I'm just going to give it the benefit of the doubt. But anyway, I just want to say this. A lot of this happened in the episode. Again, I just want to be a little bit of a D&D defender here. I still have to get that Twitter handle, D&D defender. But this is an incredibly complex to shoot. I'm just going to say this. Most of you motherfuckers listening to this, and I love you all, couldn't put together one scene where John talks to Sansa and they're sitting down.
Yeah.
Heath knows this. Making films and video, anything, it's incredibly hard. There's so many moving pieces. And things do get lost along the way. Now, someone else could say, well, this is their job and this is the biggest show. And that's where I say, I think you're right. I give them some credit here and there. And I know that there's discrepancies sometimes really from, this is something I used to teach. I taught film and video for like 15 years. This is what I always taught. There's three, every video, film, whatever, is three things. It's actually four things. It's the idea someone had. Then it's the script, which is different from that. Then it's what you shoot, which is different from that. Then it's what you edit, which is different from that. So along this chain, things do get lost. And I think sometimes they have to make decisions that are, would be, could, you know, they could spend 2 hours explaining to us why they did these little things that bother us. And if they had done something else, they'd have to take that out. So I just want to give them the benefit of the doubt. I enjoyed the episode, but I do have to agree with some people that I can't deny that this is becoming a little bit greatest hits, you know, mm-hmm. All the time, not every episode, but we're getting some greatest hits here. And that can be,
yeah,
a little...
And not the lost episode greatest hits, because that was really good.
No, but you know what I mean.
No, I know what you mean. And it's so tough for us because are in the industry, have been in the industry, or continue to be in the industry. And, like, if you come to visit on set, like, whatever people have ever come visit me on set, it's boring as hell. It's a lot of waiting, and it's not magical. What's magical is the final product, or... And so it's tough for me to criticize when I know how hard it is to make 1 hour of television. But that's what we do here on the podcast. That's what fans are. They see the finished product and they hate it, like it, lukewarm, whatever. If we took in consideration how hard it is to make a show, we wouldn't hate anything. And so it's just human nature. But... You know, so it's tough at times, but, you know, we're just seeing the finished product. It wasn't like we were on the script committee or the, you know, in the art direction or whatever, like we, you know, or in the editing bay and we're like, oh, shoot, you should add this. This makes sense. It, you know, there's certain people that have that job and sometimes things get cut. Then when studios are involved and networks, it's a whole other ball game. So it's tough. But we only can judge what we see, the finished product, and that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah, man. Yeah, just when you're thinking about that, I can tell you how many times I've written something or been on the set shooting something, get into the editing room, and realize that you forgot to have a main character say a stupidly simple, important thing. It happens all the time. And if that happens to me, where the chain is like me and two other people, imagine when the chain is 1,000 people long. It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. And you could have that awful, like, ADR, like, so why are we going here? Oh, to catch the villain. When you see a car passing and you don't even see people talk. That is added in a lot of shows to forward the plot, to explain it, to dumb it down. Game of Thrones doesn't do that. They could add a line of dialogue where we see the, you know, the side of a mountain. So why are we here? Well, we're here to kill the Night's King. You know, so I'm glad they don't do that cheesy part of it to really dumb it down. So it's a give and take.
Yep, that's the way you got to look at it, Solo. It's a give and take. So then we have Thoros dies. Sad to see him go. Don't have much of a connection show-wise. I thought he was a cool character, but I also think that it was kind of, you know, if you're in the Deadpool here, he was pretty much number one, either him or Barrack, right? So now that Gendry ran back. But I will miss him because I find his character to be incredibly interesting, and it also takes away their reviver on the Dungeons and Dragons crew. They don't have the mage to bring him back to life anymore.
Well, if you remember, Folo, he didn't believe the words. He just said them, and he resurrected him. So,
yep.
I have a feeling a Davos or someone else could take his place. Yeah, I didn't have much of a connection to him, to be honest. Wasn't one of my favorite characters. I did like that he told the Hound he didn't even remember, like, the greatest battle he's known for. He was just hammered. I thought that was cool. But, yeah, I'll be honest, I wasn't really invested in him. Sad to see him go, but, you know, I'll spill a beer to him. But aside from that, I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm sure tomorrow on the call in we'll have some book people give us some good background and we'll miss them more. So
probably
now we have the suggestion. You know, they see the Night's King, and we have the suggestion from Jorah. You know, if you take him out, like you said earlier, it'll take them all out. Jon's intent on bringing the White back. So in a sense, they kind of nix the idea of trying to fight the people that they'd never be able to fight because they're surrounded by thousands of Whites. Okay, so that conversation, though, was interesting. It is those are the kind of conversations you probably have when you're in like a situation.
Dude,
if
that was all of us, I'd be like, hey, Folo, shouldn't we just kill this motherfucker and we'd be done? You'd be like, yeah, but I got to take this White back to Perry. No, but, you know, that's the point where I was at. Yes, you're right. Why are you taking this White back? Who freaking cares? And that's where I started to collide with, oh, yeah, I guess I don't like this storyline. I like the Trek, and I like them going out there, but I hate that they have to bring a White back because I feel like, what is that going to do? You know, I don't know. I'm just, Folo, help me.
Yeah, no, let's just keep on going.
Oh, yeah, that's smart.
I like what Barrack says. And by the way, again, love his voice. Maybe greatest. Like, he should be doing the voiceover for everything. Just the way he speaks, the tone, the cadence. I love Barrack, and I'm glad to see that he survived. And I like the way he kind of sees his destiny. You wrote it down here. Like, he kind of reminds John of, you know, what they're doing here, which I think actually makes John want to get the White more. So, now we have an interesting scene where do you have anything else you want to say about that scene?
No, I just wanted to back you up on that. It was like, Barrack has been resurrected. Why am I keep living? What's my point? And then the whole conversations with him and John and stuff, I think he's finally realizing, you know what, this could be the end for me, but if I can help humanity survive and this is my destiny, then I'm all for it. And then I think once you understand that and you give yourself to, like, okay, now I get it, that's when tragedy can happen, but also good things can happen when you don't have that fear anymore. So I really liked that.
Great way to put it, man. So now we cut to Winterfell, and it's a quick scene where instead of involving Brienne with whatever is going on with Sansa, as Littlefinger had weirdly suggested, instead Sansa has a letter from Cersei asking Sansa to come to King's Landing. So Cersei is obviously now trying to get everybody together at once so she can kill them all.
Exactly.
Right? I mean,
I don't like it.
Oh, go ahead, buddy.
I just, it was weird because, right, it's like Littlefinger was nudging her to, like, oh, get Brienne between you and Arya and deal with that, thinking maybe that Brienne would defend Sansa against Arya and maybe they would cancel each other out or whatever. But yet now she sends her on her behalf, and Sansa treats Brienne like a little bitch. Like, you're going to do what I say and get the hell out of here. You better leave now or you won't make it. And that's when I turned against Sansa. I was with her and then I turned against, I did not like this scene. Now, not saying it wasn't done well, not in that point of view, but I just, why is Sansa getting rid of Brienne, the one person who could protect her from anybody? It just bugged the shit out of me, Axel.
Yeah, I found it to be strange. And then I was thinking, wait, maybe that's Arya. That's not Sansa. Arya killed her. It's like, wait, is Arya having conversations with herself now? Like, okay, what's going on? I thought it was weird. I mean, I'm excited to see Brienne and Jaime together. But I just thought it was weird. The thing of Cersei asking her to come there makes perfect sense. But mm-hmm. then she's going to send Brienne. I don't know. It was just weird to me, man. I'm going to have to watch it again. I'll probably have some. Yeah, I'll have a bigger thing. But do you have anything else you want to add to that one?
No, I want to rewatch that one because I still don't quite get it.
Yeah. Now we have, which I just want to point out in this scene, great acting by Peter Dinklage, which, by the way, we have the same birthday. I just want to throw that out there for everyone. Yeah, and also he was a World of Video member. Yes, he was a member of World of Video. Anybody who knows what World of Video is, it's where I used to work.
World of Video, baby!
The best video store in Manhattan. No, it wasn't Kim's. It was World of Video. Okay. Tyrion tries to talk Dany out of going to save Jon because the Raven has gotten there really quick. And I didn't have such a problem with, I got to be honest with you, I didn't have such a huge problem with the Raven getting there if, again, they had established that those guys were stuck there for like a day. Then I wouldn't have had a problem with it because a bird can fly pretty quick.
Especially them damn ravens.
You know what I should do? You know what I want to do, Heath? I literally want to stop the podcast without editing. And I want to look up how fast can a raven fly?
Do it.
Do you want me to? Okay. So, Heath, talk about this scene a little bit while I look up how fast a raven fly.
You know, I thought Tyrion, he made a great point. Because he's trying to get Dany not to go. Because if she dies, they're all lost. And they're all fucked. And she's like, sometimes the best decisions are the ones you don't make or the ones you don't pursue. And so I agreed with him, but at the same time, I'm like, you can't let all these guys die because they're like your heart and soul of your inner core of your, you know, your fighting staff, if you will. So I agreed with Tyrion, but I liked that Dany went ahead. And I did love what she was wearing. It was Lady Sola pointed out. I'm like, yeah, she is wearing a nice gown. That's pretty nice.
Okay, I have the answer.
Oh, look at that. I stole it enough.
Okay. An average flying speed of around 50 miles per hour or up to 60 miles per hour have been observed in top racers for short distances, about 100 miles. So.
Done.
I have no idea how far the wall, like the wall is from Dragonstone, but judging upon maps I've seen of Westeros, it's pretty far. So I would say it would probably take the Raven a couple days. I mean, I don't know if you're going 60 miles an hour, you know, how far could it be? Say it was 500 miles. I don't know. Maybe it would take a day or so.
Yeah, maybe less than a day. Maybe like 20 hours. Maybe the Ravens, you know, some Red Bull.
Yeah, okay. All right. But then again,
could,
you have the like.
I could buy less than a day. If it's less than a day, okay, and then the dragons go there quick. Okay, maybe.
Okay. All right. We're going to let it go.
All right.
Again, I think they could have solved this by establishing how long they were trapped on that little island, and they could have easily made me believe that it was a couple of days if they had done it right, because I do think that the Night King did this on purpose to get the dragon. That's what I think. So,
yeah, that could be.
But now you know, everyone, podcast Winterfell, a raven can fly up to 60 miles per hour in our world. And hey, they could have supercharged ravens in Game of Thrones world.
Yeah, so you think in 3 hours, that's like 180 miles? That seems reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But then again, it did in the first season, it did take like 3 weeks. No, it took a fortnight to get from King's Landing to Winterfell. But that was
now
by
you're talking fortnights.
Yeah, that's a four. Well, that's Fortnite, man. That's
it's
Wimbledon
2 weeks,
talk.
Baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't go Fortnite on me, please. I didn't know what that was until Game of Thrones.
All right, Roger Federer. All right, here we go. So I kind of echoing what you said, it's really a toss up here who's right. And there, I don't really think there is a right answer.
The only right answer is next scene.
Yeah. Or the other one thing I was thinking, you know, it would be a great right answer is how about this, Tyrion? How about you ride the dragon?
That's what I thought. I thought he was going to hop on the other dragon and go with her.
I really did. He was going to hop on.
Dude, he was going to hop on and freaking be like, woohoo.
He's just going to hop. Go. He's going to be like, yo, let me get in there, man. It's like
yo,
a convertible.
Yo, your shotgun. Yeah.
Shotgun. All right. So Danny takes off. The Hound starts getting cocky. This is where you were saying he's an idiot. yeah, he starts throwing the stones. And I kind of love it because this is actually an example of good writing. I'm going to point that out
because I
think this is totally in character with the Hound.
Yeah, he was an idiot for doing it, but it makes sense. We're just waiting. Let me freaking do something. And one of his rocks lands short. They realize the ice isn't breaking. It froze over, and they come after him one by one. And actually, as much of an idiot he was, thank you, Hound, for doing that.
You and know? Then I want to say.
But if it goes.
Oh, go ahead, buddy.
Oh, go ahead. No, you, buddy. You're the king.
No, you're the king. But, okay, since you said I'm going to go, which is this. He's an idiot again, though, because once he smashes the ice, why doesn't he just tell everybody, smash the ice all around the rock?
I was thinking the same thing. Just smash around you guys. Why didn't they smash? Hulk smash. That's all they had to do.
Yeah,
sons
I don't know.
Bitches.
What
That's
were you
okay.
going to say, pal?
No, I just... I knew Danny was coming to save them. I don't know. I'm going to have to rewatch. I enjoyed it. I'm going to say this. I really enjoyed it. The whole sequence of fighting the whites and the White Walkers and all that good stuff. Yeah, there's some issues. I think we were geared up to see the final season as the battle versus the White Walkers. This came premature, and it almost felt like, okay, here's a little nugget, but it just wasn't enough. But it was, I don't know, I'm confused, Folo, confused.
Yeah.
I'm so confused. I don't know. I got mixed feelings, bro. I mean, I enjoyed it. I'm like you. I love seeing snow, rain, water. I you know, me and Lady Soul actually really did enjoy the episode. We have a good time watching the show. Then when we analyze it, I'm just like, oh, why do we have to do this or that? But it's so tough because my love for Game of Thrones is so strong. It's like you're in love with someone and they maybe do something off character, but you're like, oh, that's okay. You haven't done, you know, anything wrong in a while.
Yes.
It's like, I'll let it go. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. You forgot to pick up the ding dongs from Fred Meyer, but I love you anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But I want it to be the greatest. Okay, it wasn't, but you know what? I still will love it, and probably 10 years from now, I'm going to love it. Like, to be honest, what I was thinking tonight is how, I don't remember the episode name, but when the Wildlings come to the wall and they have that big battle directed by Neil Marshall, that episode.
Watchers on the Wall.
I remember thinking in the podcast, like, I was a little disappointed. And then years later, I'm like, wow, it was so great, that episode. I loved how it was calm before. They had discussions on top of the wall. Then it happened. And now I love that episode so much more now than I did at the time. So, granted, I don't think this episode is even close to that episode, but I remember not super loving that episode because it was just action, and I was kind of like, oh, I wanted more. But when I look back at it and rewatch it, I think it's one of the most amazing episodes. So, again, I'm no expert. I'm just an idiot at the Night's Watch. What do I know?
Well, I know where you're at, buddy. And there's a part of me that also says this is the most expensive television show in the history of the world. And what do we want? Perfection. But we are here to critique, so we shall.
Okay.
I think that this whole whites attacking thing, this kind of strained credulity as well, because it was like they were coming from everywhere. I like the way they kept on turning and almost hitting each other.
Like, right. Yeah, that was good.
And this is, again, where I thought, like, I couldn't tell who fell off the cliff in front of John or whatever. I thought it was...
Oh, I was lost, dude. I didn't know what was going on. I swear I saw Jorah die 5 times in the episode.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't know who was dying, who was gonna, you know, I was confused. I thought Tormund was gonna get killed there. I'm like, God, they're gonna kill him off. And then they don't. So I was confused.
Yeah, it was a little weird. But I still, again, I'm going to agree with you. My heart was racing and I loved it.
You say that, and that's the thing. I put my recliner in and was at the edge of my seat. And I maybe criticize or be like, it wasn't as good as Blackwater or Hard Home or, you know, I'm just like, you know what? I still was into it. I was at the edge of my seat because then we watched Twin Peaks after, and it was such a letdown. So I was like, it's the last time that I did that when I used to watch 24 and then watch another show. And I'm like, wait, this isn't as fast paced. And, you know, so, but I still was at the edge of my seat like you were.
Well, now we have it. They retreat. To where? I don't know, like three, they retreated like 3 feet and then,
four and a half.
Yeah, four. Exactly. It's four and a half. Then Danny shows up with the dragons. This was pretty awesome. Again, the dragons are projectile, dragon vomiting, fire vomit, just whoosh, you know, and since they're all like bones and rotting flesh, they're exploding. But then we have the thing that happened that I think a lot of people have been waiting to happen. Excuse me there. Oh man, I got tied up there. Gesundheit, yeah. The Night King takes his javelin, and if you saw on Twitter, the United States track and field tweeted out a picture that they're going to put the Night King. They have a spot on the national team, the Olympic team for him. That was pretty funny. And he kills a dragon. I don't know which dragon it was.
I have no clue.
It wasn't Drogon, so it was either the dragon named after Rhaegar or the dragon named after Viserys. So I think it was, I don't think it was Jon's dragon. I'm not sure. Which, because
it's Pete's dragon, I think.
Oh, maybe it was Pete's dragon. You're right. What a great movie, man. They remade that and it's amazing. I watched it with my son. Beautiful film.
Oh.
But let's talk about it, man. I thought that this was, even though I kind of saw it coming, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, I had no clue it was coming. I wasn't like you where thinking it was there. It was the Night King's plan. When he grabs the javelin, I'm like, oh no, this makes a lot of sense. And when it happened, I'm actually kind of glad we had the foreshadowing of regular arrows or, you know, Qyburn's manufactured spears to kill him. And it didn't happen. Now the foreshadowing's there. The Night King has that ice arrow and it kills the dragon. And as much as I didn't want to see one of Dany's babies die, I thought it had to happen, and it did happen, and I was sad, but it was awesome. I thought that, like, kind of bumped it up to an 8.3, 8.4 for me. I thought that was pretty amazing, and it showed, like, oh, man, they're overmatched. Even when they got dragons, they gotta think things. Now, at one point, Dany, I think Drogon did a maneuver and missed the second, you know, missed that other arrow, the ice arrow, but man, knowing that they can kill dragons just makes it a whole new ball game.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome. And it plays into something that I said on my solo Folo cast, which is I thought that when they left this battle, I theorized that perhaps they would learn from this episode that in the same way Dany would so overpower Cersei or anybody else, the Night's King and the White Walkers so overpower Dany. I don't even think it's not even close. You know, I mean,
no.
Look at how they were just, any time they killed a white, there were 50 more, 1,000 more ready to kill them. And plus, any soldiers that they can kill will become part of the Night King's army.
Oh, I know.
So every moment they're fighting, they're gaining troops immediately. They don't even have to be trained. You know, they don't even have to get them clothes. So,
well, that's why having the Magnificent Seven and dragons work, because there's no one to resurrect unless you kill a dragon. You know?
Yeah.
So it's almost like the less people you have to fight them, the better, but you have to have dragons, but now you're down one. There's got to be, Axel, and I'm sure in the off season we're going to figure this out or at least theorize about it, but we got to figure out how do you defeat the White Walkers. Sure, kill the Night's King, you probably defeat everybody, but how do you do that?
I know, man. I have a theory, and I've said it before, and it's out of line. R'hllor, the god of light, whatever, where's Melisandre going? Are there more dragon eggs? I just think that we've yet to see something coming from that side. We know more about the Night King and the White Walkers than we know about how Dany's powers and the dragons actually work. We don't know anything about them. We know how the Night King was made. You know?
You're right.
So I just feel like we're missing a part of that story, and I just feel like that will perhaps be, I don't know if it's going to come in this season, maybe it would be next season, maybe I'm totally wrong, but I just feel like there's something has to come now to this side. We keep on having this balance of power switch, you know, and it's obviously like, what?
Okay, Melisandre's going back to Volantis, right?
Yeah.
She's going to bring together all the witches and lords of light and all the followers, and they're going to come together. And there's got to be something they can do to help humanity. There's got to be a strong force. Yeah. I mean, I'm basically backing you up. I'm not coming up with anything new, but you're right. We don't know much about the Lord of Light other than Beric being resurrected and Melisandre and Jon Snow. There's going to be a bigger force we don't know about to come to save the day, or at least to put up a great fight.
Yeah, or at least educate Dany a little bit, because...
Yes, yes.
Like, let's be honest, nobody told her how to train the dragons. She didn't know what to do. She, you know, and the
she told me how to train my dragon.
Oh, Solo.
Oh, Solo.
That was almost as bad as a DJ interjection.
I know. You know what? I think because I haven't been on a podcast with DJ in a while, I had to channel my inner DJ. That was for you, buddy.
There you go, DJ.
Sorry, Fobo. Shout out, Fobo.
Anyway. The dragon gets killed. It was a fantastic scene too, the way the shot and the special effects were amazing. Okay, nobody can shit on that. Amazing. The whole episode, the special effects were amazing. Right. Dany leaves, but Jon is still fighting back, and he sees the Night's King pick up another javelin. Dany gives the push forward, the dragon takes off, Jon is dragged underwater, they fly off, they veer out of the way of the javelin, and then Jon comes out of the water, and who's there to save him but Uncle Benjen.
Uncle Benjen, Lady Solo called it right away. She goes, that's the guy, the uncle. I'm like, Uncle Benjen, baby.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed here, man.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, well, these last-second saves are a little annoying, and there's like four of them in this episode, maybe even five. We didn't even talk about the Hound saving Tormund. I was totally scared that Tormund was going to die. But I also felt, why didn't Benjen get on the horse? Was he sacrificing himself? I don't know. I just felt like he could have given us more. I wanted them to ride off together. So the next thing we could have is like we could have had a little bit of a scene before Jon goes back with him and Uncle Benjen talking. You know, it's like he's like, Uncle Benjen, what the fuck? Look fucked up. And then he leaves.
I know that. I was disappointed with that. I guess I kind of thinking in the mind of Benjen Stark. He was tired and just needed to, here's my purpose, I'm done. I dragged your brother to the wall, and now I saved your ass. I'm done, fellas, I'm out.
I'm done with you fucking nephews. You guys are pains in the asses.
Enough. No, the last second says, we got it with Stannis' army, with the Knights of the Vale, and now... last second dragons, we're getting it. We got it throughout the whole series, so it's kind of, it's unfortunately it's expected and it happens.
I just wish there was more Uncle Benjen. All right, so
I'll be your Uncle Benjen.
Yeah, you will be my. You are my uncle. You're my.
Can
uncle.
I be your Uncle Benjen?
Yeah.
Next time you say lock, Uncle Heath's on the phone. Say it's Uncle Benjen. You'll be like, what the hell?
Yeah, I'll say, who Uncle Benjen at? That's not Uncle Benjen. You're lying. So now we jump to Dragonstone, and the Hound is taking... the Hound is putting the White in the boat. Who does he talk to there? He talks to Beric, right?
Yeah, is the Hound going alone to Knot's Landing to take the White with him?
No, I thought he was putting the White in the boat, and I thought it was either... Oh, no, it was Jorah Frenzel.
Oh, it's Beric. No, it's Beric saying, hey, I hope, you know, I hope we meet again. And the Hound's like, hell, I hope I don't see you again.
Oh, yeah, but then I think the Hound walks off, and Beric gets in the boat with... I don't know. I was confused.
Oh,
I'll watch
I don't
it again.
Know. Okay. Yeah, sorry, guys and girls. Sorry. I don't. I just assumed because the Hound was putting the White in that he was leaving, but maybe
okay.
Not. I don't know. I thought, and then that sets up him versus the Mountain eventually. But
You know what, Heath?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, maybe you're right, dude. Maybe you're right. because it definitely couldn't have been Jorah, because Jorah's up at the top of the wall talking
to
Danny.
He's up at the top with Danny. Yeah.
Right. And I think you're right. I think if the Hound is going, that's fantastic. You're right. It'll set up Clegane Bowl, which, again, I'll say, I think is utterly meaningless, because that's not his brother. It's a zombie, and the Hound isn't going to be smart enough to recognize that, and it would just end up being a mercy killing. But I guess a lot of people want to see Clegane Bowl.
Yeah. Clegane Bowl would have been great before the Mountain got defeated by Oberyn. But, well, Oberyn ended up losing, but you know what I mean, when he was the Mountain. That would have been great, but not now. I'm with you.
Okay, then we get Dany and Jorah, and I was kind of confused. I guess Dany was, at the same time, watching her dragon wail and kind of look for its brother, as she was feeling the loss of her son, her dragon son, and she was feeling the loss of Jon Snow. It was really emotional, and it was good acting. She looked really fucked up. And then we see John come, and he returns.
And Jorah's like, oh, fuck. What, Dario, Jon Snow, what the heck? I can't get a break.
Yeah, man.
He's like, let's go, Khaleesi. Let's go. Yeah. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, poor Jorah. Hey, yo, everyone should go and look at the Pixel Factor on Twitter. You should be following. I think what's that?
No, I'm just saying Pixel Factor is freaking awesome. I love the Pixel Factor.
Yeah, definitely. And that's Kenny, and he does all the stuff for, I think that's his name, Kenny, does all the stuff for A Pot of Cass. And he had a great fake ad for Jorah Friend Zone Eau de Toilette, a fragrance. And it was really fantastic. He did a great job, too, where, like, Jorah's in black and white, and the perfume is in color, you know, like they always do. it was really funny. This was, we see John, and I just thought this was a good scene. All right, now we go to the final Sansa and Arya scene, where this continues to get even stranger. Arya finds the faces. I think I messed up. I think I said earlier she was looking, but now she's looking in a room and she finds the faces. She questions Arya. Arya tells her, you know, that she has trained to be a faceless man, and then she tells her about the lying game, which makes me think the game of faces she talks about. I don't know if she mentioned the lying game, but the lying game, the game of fate, like this game, when Arya starts talking, this is where I was utterly even more convinced that she had already killed Littlefinger. Now I was like, it's Littlefinger because she's in the room with Sansa. this scene, you know, let's see what happens. I thought it was, I can't remember honestly if it was this scene or the scene earlier when she gives her the knife at the end. It's kind
of
a blur.
That's this scene.
Okay, that's
this
scene.
Because at this point, I thought Arya was going to kill Sansa. I really felt it. I thought she was going to kill her.
The thought crossed my mind.
I honestly was like, because she's talking about everything. It's like, what the perfect way to get back at Littlefinger and become Sansa. Like, I don't know if that's a foreshadow. It freaked me out. She didn't do it. She put fear in Sansa's eyes. But you know what? I thought that was going to happen. But she gives her the dagger. And I'm like, maybe that was symbolism. Hey, you better not trust Littlefinger. But I don't know. I was a little confused when she didn't kill her. And I'm like, oh, man, it's getting bad.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see, man. Wasn't super happy with it. But all right, so now we get to the final two scenes on the boat with John and Danny. They have their little love scene here. You want to know something? This totally worked for me. Their relationship is totally working for me. I think it's earned. I think it's one of the things this season that I don't think anyone can complain about. And I found this scene to be touching and moving. And when she saw his scars and she was sitting there when he woke up, and I just thought It was really kind of beautiful. And I just want to ask you, just before I get, before we get your ideas here, Solo, when she was touching his hand, right? And they were holding hands, and he said, like, you know, you could be my queen, or then he said something, and then, like, there was, he, like, kind of closed his eyes for a second or something. He, like, drifted, and then she was whole, and then she just looked at, and it was, it's like something happened. Like, it was either that, for a second I thought he died. Like, she held it, she was holding his hand, and it kind of went limp, and then she, like, squeezed it, and he kind of came back, and I was like, did he just die? And come back, and like she immediately brought him back to life, or did she just realize she loved him?
You know, it's funny because you're an editor, and I love when you pick up things like this because it's stuff I don't see. And the fact that you brought that up, that did she resurrect him with that tight squeeze, and that's, you have that eye, and normal people aren't going to pick up on that. May not happen, but I now that I think about it, I want to rewatch it quick. But watching it with Lady Solo in a woman's perspective, she brought up, she goes, wow, Danny's been, this is the first time she's really been in love on her own. And I was like, really? I'm like, oh yeah, Drago was a forced, she learned to love him. The other marriage was political. Dario was lust. She really is, has fallen for Jon Snow. And I think the two of them have fallen for each other, and they even had that moment. And then, of course, they pull away realizing, whoa, whoa, we got bigger things to accomplish. So I didn't get the resurrection part, but maybe, you know, Targaryen, who knows? You could be right. It could be that special. She could, I guarantee you, she's fallen in love, but it could be the Targaryen connection. And the fact the two of them are embracing each other in that moment, she may confuse that for love. It could be love in another way, but she doesn't know he's a Targaryen. You know, maybe that's the relationship she wished she had with her brother. You know, so it kind of... And I need you to explain one thing for me, for the Sentazzo household. Is John her nephew or half-brother?
Okay, John is her nephew. So Danny's father was the Mad King, and the Mad King's, the Mad King had an older, book people could tell, say what they mentioned in the show and what the, I think there might be a missing brother or something. I don't know. But anyway, her older brother is John's father. So technically, that's why people say, you know, according to blah, 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 if John really is his son, then John is actually the heir to that, to the throne through that line. Even though, again, I don't think it makes any sense, because then why isn't Cersei? Why isn't, so wasn't Stannis? Isn't Gendry? It doesn't make, I think that's kind of part of the show is supposed to show you, just like what Cersei said, whoever takes the crown holds the crown.
Yeah, so in the show, do we know that he would be her nephew?
Yes.
Or is that just book?
Yeah. Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. It's been made evidently clear through last week's episode, blah blah blah, but we already knew, as soon as we knew that that was John at the Tower of Joy, then we knew that he was Danny's nephew.
Okay. Just to the common viewer who doesn't podcast, they may not pick up on that. So that's why I wanted it clear, because I have to report back to Lady Solo tonight. I said, I'm podcasting with Axel. I'll find out for you.
Yes, that is, you know, and whenever, if it's Bran or whoever, if we ever see Howland Reed, Mira's dad, you know, who was at the Tower of Joy, Ned's right. Best bud, if you, then they'll know. But again, I think they just might never know. Don't really think it matters.
It doesn't really matter in the world of Game of Thrones.
You know? I don't know.
Because cousins and brothers and sisters, well, what are you going to do?
Well, in that case, yeah, that's true. But I love this scene, and I thought it was great. And now, when he said, my queen, when he initially said that, I have to try to think, is he asking her to marry him, but he'd say my queen. He wasn't.
No, no. Excuse me. I think he was like, you're my queen now. I would bend the knee, but yes, I'm indisposed. So I think it was just he was declaring that you are my queen now. I will fight for you and yada, yada, yada.
Okay. So I just want to clear that up for the other people at home who because I told my wife that I'd ask Solo.
Well, I don't know if I'm right, but maybe.
All right. So now we have let's let that out. I'm going to take a sip of water while we're at it, Solo.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, we've been going an hour and a half.
I know. This is a long one, dude. This was quite an episode. So we're at the end of it, and now this is where I learned. As soon as I saw the chains moving, I said I should keep my mouth shut, because right after the dragon died, my dog barked or something, or my kid got—I don't remember what happened. And we paused it, and my wife goes, oh, my God. And I go, yeah, you know what's even a bigger oh, my God? And she goes, what? And I go, that's going to be an ice dragon. And then she was like, oh, man. And I know everybody was thinking that. I'm no genius for it. But I felt bad. I kind of like priest a little bit, like my precognition spoiled her. It's a mind crime.
Well, you're a precog. You're a precog. What are you going to do?
But yeah, so they take the dragon out with these huge chains, which made me think again, why do they have these huge chains? They knew what they were doing. And now the dragon's eye opens, and it is a White Walker eye. And I want to say, Mike Hull, if you were right, and in the first episode, Danny actually did have a glint of a White Walker eye when she was standing on that beach, then you, my friend, are a genius.
Genius.
Genius. Shout out. Genius. Shout out to Mike Hull. By the way, I want to tell you something funny. If you say Mike's, please. If you say Mike's name fast, it sounds like you're just saying his first name. Michael.
Oh, Michael. Michael. Michael.
Michael.
That's a good point. That's why I go Mikey Hull. See?
All right. I just wanted to point that out for people at home. So what do you think, dude? The White Walkers have a dragon.
Yeah, that's not good. And the brothers are going to have to kill brothers. And, oh boy, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I think at this point, even when Danny was torching all of those whites, it was awesome, but I was also thinking there's so many more of them, and there's only three dragons, now there's only two dragons, and they also not only, again, do they not only lose the dragon, but the White Walkers gain a dragon.
Oh, I know.
But my question is this. Is this dragon going to spout ice from its mouth?
The only thing, I just thought ice dragon when it happened. So, I don't know. Could it be ice? Well, it would freeze you to death or fire you to death. I don't think it matters.
But it can't be fire, right?
No, it's probably ice because the White Walkers are all about bringing winter with them, so it would make sense that it would breathe ice and freeze everything.
Now, Solo.
Yeah?
A long time ago, Dany was at a place called the House of the Undying, and she had a vision. And in that vision, she saw the throne room in King's Landing, and it looked like it was destroyed, and you couldn't tell. Was it fire? Was it ash? Was it snow? And I have to say that our boy Derek, who was on a pod earlier this season with Mike, texted me. And also, we got a message from, I think it was John Wambacher, making the connection. That looks like what would happen if an ice dragon took it apart.
Wow. I'm sexually aroused, Commander.
You got a Game of Thrones boner? What do they? What does Aaron say?
That's from A Few Good Men. But yeah, no, they could be right, because I know we've always said, oh, looks like snow coming in. Looks like ash could be what. You know, I always thought it was snow. People say ash. Now, looks like winter is coming, bitches.
Yo, all I have to say is if the finale is Cersei actually gets, like, maybe Sansa, something happens with Sansa and Arya, I don't know. Oh, holy shit. I just thought of something crazy. Is Brienne Arya? And then she's sending Arya to kill Cersei without knowing it? But that would mean that Arya would have to kill Brienne. I don't know.
Yes, Arya would have killed Brienne, and then
that's not
Arya wouldn't be at Winterfell anymore, because she'd be Brienne.
But then how is she having conversations with Sam? This is getting confusing, so it's late.
Yeah, dude, put your faces back in your bag, Folo. Take a hit, and let's go to bed.
All right. Well, I mean, you have any final thoughts on this episode? Looking forward also to the finale, because we're not going to hear from you until the finale, Solo. Unless you want to do a little solo pod this week, it's always available to you.
Oh, you know what? It's possible. It's very possible. I don't know. But because there's going to be some Heath solo pods coming in the future for you Patreons, our loyal community. So I can't promise that. I will promise some off-season stuff, but I will say this, all in all. I like the episode more talking about it with you. And I know that we have issues and what, but because I enjoy it so much, you know, I like the episode more now after talking about it with you. And I know people are going to like not like it or hate parts or whatever, but you know what? The fact that you confuse my mind with your theories, I feel like I'm in lost ages, you know, lost land again. So I love it, dude. I love when you come up with these things. Now you got me confused. You always convince me. So now I'm like, who the hell's Arya? Is the dragon Arya? I don't know. But no, man, I liked the episode a lot. I didn't think it was one of the greatest, but I enjoyed it, and I can't wait for the finale.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, man. I mean, the pieces are coming together. And if Cersei's going to have this meeting and Dany's going to be there, blah, 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 and then an ice dragon shows up and winter really comes, that would be one hell of a finale. That would be like, what was that, Knott's Landing, where they got everybody into one room and then a bomb went off or something?
Is that why I've been calling King's Landing Knott's Landing for like 6 seasons?
Maybe, dude. Maybe that's why I said it. Maybe it was Dallas. I don't. Somebody out there tweeted us. What show was that where they did that? But this.
And you probably got to be over 40 to.
Yeah. But the other thing, too.
Unless
you've been binging, what? Which a lot of people are. It could be that Cersei is going to pull a Mad King and blow everybody up with wild. I mean, I just think, like you said, I had issues with the episode. I'm trying to forgive it when I think about the money, the time, everything it takes to make this, the chains that we talked about of production. But I'm on it, man. I'm on this boat. I'm looking forward to next week. I'm going to watch this episode again, and I'm probably going to like it more. And again, of course, I always like it more when talking to you, Solo. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. Any last words, Solo?
Just Dracarys, me derogales, Valhalla, Juliana Margulies.
Thank you for listening to Podcast Winterfell. You can find the podcast at dvrpodcast.com. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/dvr. You can email the podcast, podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @WinterfellPod and on Facebook, Podcast Winterfell.